This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio. Today we'll be talking about Iraq and the labor movement there. With me to talk about this issue is Amjad Al-Jahari, the North American representative of the Federation of Workers' Councils and Unions of Iraq. He's on a speaking tour sponsored by U.S. Labor Against the War. Amjad Al-Jahari.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to be here. Thanks for being here. It's great to see you and to talk about this issue, which doesn't get talked about enough. That is the plight of organized labor in Iraq. Before we get deeply into that, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? You were born in Iraq, correct?
I was born in Iraq in 1966, had my bachelor degree in Mosul University in 1989. I was sent to the army in 1990. I was asked to go to war at that time, the Kuwait invasion and later the Kuwait liberation. That war between Iraq and United States, or the coalition, U.S. coalitions.
What was that like?
It was 1990.
And so you were there, you went into Kuwait?
Actually, I didn't go because I refused to join the army at that time because I didn't believe, and I still don't believe, that it's worth to die for. That's what blacklisted me by the government, and I wasn't denied any government enterprise position. I was supposed to be a high school teacher. They didn't want me to be. I was working with my father as a tailor. Worked in Baghdad among the workers, sewing machine workers, textile workers, and tried to build a union there, or at least to start to build a union. As we know that under Saddam's regime, the unionized means politics, means you are left-wing, means you are against the government, and means you threaten the government. And that was what made the security police and even police themselves, not even the security, to follow me around here and there.
Was it obvious to you that they were following you?
Well, actually, we know them there in Iraq. I mean, you would know that it's not like following me behind me, but when I go to a new textile factory, I sense there are some people are here too, because they were provoking some questions about my activity. Where was I, and did I go to war? Am I a soldier yet or not? I mean, how did I finish my my term in the army, in the military, and for 1.5 year, while at that time it was 2 years supposedly? You know, all these kind of questions, I felt them like coming upon me. Later on, my brother was arrested for 9 months because of his views and his activities among the workers too. After 9 months, when he was released, conditionally. He was asked to cooperate with the government. In 1993, when he got out under that condition, because the Kurdistan area and the north, the no-fly zone, wasn't under Saddam's control. So he fled to that area, to that region, and from there he fled to Turkey. And the government policy is, if your brother fled or your brother is wanted and they come after him, they couldn't find him, they will come after you and they will arrest you. Since I was blacklisted at that time, they had every reason to arrest me. And I had my brother fled, so the ground was open for them to arrest me. Actually came after me twice. I wasn't home. My father called me. He said, well, they are coming after you. Try to find yourself somewhere to go. And that was in 1995, actually.
And so you went to Turkey?
I went to Turkey and worked among the immigrants there. And from there, I went to... I had an asylum in Turkey, and I was redirected to Canada when I was involved in the anti-sanctions movement and the anti-war organizations.
Well, tell me why you oppose sanctions.
Well, I've seen that sanction. I've witnessed it until 1995. These sanctions created a chaos in the country, in a sense, actually economical chaos, where many people have lost their jobs because many state enterprises were shut down at that time. The unemployment rate have risen. The buy and sell in the country was banned with the outside countries. So the inflation rate have risen dramatically. The government didn't want to do anything about it, and United States and UN Security Council kept the sanctions going on Iraq. People were dying, malnutrition, diseases, sewage system were devastated without any treatment, without any maintenance since the war. The water purification, even since the war, was devastated and wasn't fixed or wasn't reconstructed. I would say that the hundreds of thousands of people, because of that, either lost their job, lost their life, fled the country. By the end of the 2002, more than 1.5 million Iraqi died because of the sanction. More than 4 million Iraqi have fled the country. So many diseases, so many epidemics revived again in Iraq. So that was the sanction, and that's why I opposed the sanction on Iraq. And it was supposedly, when it was imposed, it was supposed by United States mainly to downfall Saddam or to overthrow Saddam. But what happened is Saddam got strengthened his grip in around the power and stayed in power rather than being downfallen. Hmm.
I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. My guest today is Amjad al-Jahari, who is the North American representative of the Federation of Workers' Councils and Unions in Iraq. You know, ironically, one justification that some U.S. pundits, right-wing pundits like George Will, used for this Iraq war was that it would end the sanctions. Finally, they came to the realization, because it was useful and convenient for them to admit that the sanctions were taking hundreds of thousands of Iraqi lives, to say, look, if you're worried about Iraqis, we'll go in there, we'll topple Saddam. Saddam, by all accounts, is brutal, and the sanctions policy is having terribly adverse effects. So why not be for the war? Why were you opposed to the war?
Well, I myself, personally, I've seen the first war, which is between Iraq and Iran, when Iraq had more than 1 million casualties at that time. More than 1.5 million Iraqi disabled were the aftermath of that war. Another war between Iraq and the Kuwait conflict war. Hundreds of thousands of Iraqi people died because of that. And it's not the matter of, or the question is not only about the death, but the question again about the devastation of the country, the infrastructure of the country. Is not like 100,000 people died and everything is set okay. The problem is after the war, when everything was devastated, the country had to go through a reconstruction, and the reconstruction took long time, have yet to be reconstructed. The ones that were devastated or bombed since 1990, the electricity power stations, or the power stations were bombed in 1990, still they are not reconstructed. So we knew that if this war break out, that again will it's the country that was crippled already now is going to kill the entire country. And we were up to, for certain extent, we were right, because what we see right now is the same devastation, the chaos, the corruption, everything was the aftermath of the war.
that I get oftentimes when I'm in debates. Well, so you wanted to leave, so you would have been okay with Saddam still being in power. How would you see Saddam falling from power when you acknowledge that the sanctions actually strengthened his hand?
Well, that's the thing. We, at that time, we said we must end the sanction. We must stop it. People, when the sanctions end, people will look at the government and will say, okay, the sanction is over. Now, what do you have to offer to offer us? The problem, the Iraqi people didn't get the chance to decide for themselves. Always we've been instructed to do whatever the outsiders want, and that was the problem. And even today, the government that we have in place, it's installed government, not the government who represents the grassroots. The government who is not only installed, the government who deepens the division among the people based on ethnicity, based on religion. And this is what we don't want, actually.
But to what extent is the government legitimate since there were those elections in January and millions of people came out?
Well, first of all, if we talk about the election, something we called it or we viewed as a phony election. A lot of fraud. Districts and regions in northern part of Iraq didn't get to vote even, and their votes was considered. In the south, the Shiite cleric, the Ayatollah al-Sistani, mentioned that, and this is like a fatwa or like a religious order, mentioned that people must vote in the election. And people, of course, if they are religious, they will afraid of something happen, because after a while of that election, before the election, when al-Sistani issued his fatwa, rumors were going around the south and southern people, telling them that if you're not going to vote, you're going to go to hell, God will punish you. And people went and voted, and so many people didn't know who to vote for. The people who are the administrative of these polling stations were doing all these frauds. But anyway, even that happened. Before that, we said this government that is going to come is the same government that was before the election, and that was the reality. The same people who had to take turn in the governing council are the same people who came back after the election. So the what we see, what the so-called election is just to, this is how we view it, is just to give the legitimacy of the American presence in Iraq, or the legitimacy of the occupation in Iraq. And this is what happened. After a while, when the government was established, Prime Minister said the occupying troops must stay here in Iraq until the stability is achieved. And this is what they wanted, actually, from the election.
Yeah, I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. My guest today is Amjad al-Jahari, who is the North American representative of the Federation of Workers' Councils and Unions of Iraq. When were you last in your country?
In Iraq, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been there last September. I went there for 4 months. I had some kind of picture in my mind about Iraq, but when I went there, I never believed what I saw. The major thing when you go there, the streets are not very well paved. Actually, they were neglected, and a lot of holes in the streets. And when I asked these people what happened, they said, well, some of them were neglected and needed maintenance, and nobody tried to reconstruct them. Most of the holes that you see here, these are because of the roadside bombs, which destroy the streets. This is the first thing that I've seen there, and going to inside the city, I've seen like the people, what they do is dumped a big mountains of garbage being dumped inside the city. And I asked what's going on there, and they said, "What told me? Well, they are dumping the garbage. They're collecting the garbage around from around the city, and they dump it here. At the end of the day, if it's creating a lot of damage to the environment, well, it's not." If it's creating, it created already. But every while what they do is they're burning that garbage and bring another load of garbage again. So this is the second instinct what I get there. I went home, water was not available, electricity was power. The people have no power and they get 4 hours of electricity every day. I mean, this is the ordinary people. How they live and how they suffer. When I was telling them, okay, and do you think, do you guys think any change in the foreseeing future? They said, well, we've been like this for more than 1.5 years, and we lived under the sanction for 13 years. I think we can accept another 5 or 6 years like this. And I said, well, but this is not what we were promised. And they were telling me, well, if you wanna get promises, there are so many people promise you, but who's gonna bring you the truth? This is a problem. And these are the realities. The unemployment rate is very high. The wages of the worker is set by the governing council or the civil provisional authorities, actually. Called CPA in Iraq, set a minimum wage of $45 per month per worker, while the inflation rate is really high and the housing is $90 per month. And imagine what kind of living conditions that Iraqi live under the occupation that was supposed to bring democracy and freedom and prosperity and all kind of good things that we were promised.
I'm Jal Jahari. How high is the unemployment there? You say it's high. Do you have a figure for me?
Actually, the government officials just stated earlier in June, stated that it is around 40% or higher. This is in government official, but we don't believe in that. We believe this is much higher. And in the first week of June, Mr. Laith Kubba, the spokesperson of Ibrahim al-Jaafari, the prime minister, mentioned that there are 40 to 60% of the public sector are needed and the rest of them will be laid off. Who forms more than 2.5 million workers will be thrown into the job market. So that will create more chaos in the country. And by the way, Laith Kubba was once working with the American National Endowment for Democracy. I met with him in 2001 in D.C. in the anti-sanctions conference. And when he came there at that time, he said he is against Saddam, but he is not against the war. And now we've seen him. Like, he's a big supporter of the war and occupation.
Now he's a big shot.
Yeah.
You've been trying to organize unemployed workers and workers into unions in Iraq. Your organization has the Federation of Workers' Councils. How is that work going?
Well, we formed the Union of Unemployed in Iraq in May 2003, right after the occupation, because we have witnessed the necessity of that organization since the country was devastated and the unemployment rate was more than 80% at that time. We had so many demonstrations. We had negotiations with the CPA at that time. We demanded better job. We demanded employment insurance. And by the way, the Iraqi people or the Iraqi workers don't have employment insurance if they are laid off. So we demanded that one, and we didn't demand much. We asked for $100 per person, and they said, "Well, this is not fair because the people who are working now are getting $45, and you are asking for the working people, and you are asking for $100 for unemployed people. This is not fair." So we kept negotiation, and finally they said, "If we." Because we had more than 300,000 members in our organization, they said if we give $1 or one penny That means we're going to recognize you as a union, and we don't want to do this. Later on in December that year, we formed the federation, and our union of unemployed just joined that federation of worker council and union in Iraq. Considering that federation is an umbrella organization for all the unions that join unions of workers who join that federation.
Now, what rights to organize are there in Iraq, and has that improved since Saddam's been overthrown?
Well, if we tell me about the labor code, on this is in particular, we have a problem with it. The labor code was under Saddam. It was enforced under Saddam, and it was again enforced after the occupation or under the occupation. In 1987, Saddam has banned the right to organize and has dissolved all the public sector unions. And again, what happened is under the occupation in January 2004, the governing council headed by at that time Ayad Alawi, the prime minister, issued a decree number 16, giving the official status to one union rather than disregarding the other unions. We are not arrested by the government right now, but we are not recognized. We are recognized by ILO, the International Labor Organization, by the ALO, which is Arab Labor Organization. We are recognized by the AFL here, by the international other union organizations in Europe, in Asia, in Africa, in Australia, but we are not recognized in Iraq, while Iraq is our stronghold. So this is the challenge. These are the challenges that we are facing today, and we're trying to put forward a labor code that secure and guarantees the right of association, the all human rights, and even a woman right and children rights.
Are you having any successes, even though you're not formally recognized on any shop floor or with any company?
So far, we're doing very well, actually. Our members have risen to, the number of members, I mean, have risen to, from when we started like, the federation, I mean, when we started in 400 workers, now we are having between 18 to 20,000 members. We do have a good agenda. We put forward a draft of labor code. We presented to the people. People accepted it. We are doing very well, and because of the financial difficulties that we have, since the government doesn't want to support us, we are trying to organize or to get more support from internationally, and by creating a solidarity movement around the world.
And part of that solidarity movement here in the United States is this group, U.S. Labor Against the War, that's been sponsoring this tour.
Exactly.
The privatization effort that's happened in Iraq as soon as the United States got there, mm-hmm. Paul Bremer and others who were imposing privatization on one sector after another, what has the consequence of that been, either for the economy or for unions or the people?
Well, the thing is, as I'm saying, is the privatization, when the occupation have just started, began or declared themselves as an occupation, they said we're going to privatize every sector in the government or in the state or in the economic field except the oil sector. Because it's state-owned, actually. It's not because it belongs to the people. It's just because it's state-owned, and it must be state-owned. And the revenue of that oil, even ordinary Iraqi doesn't know where this revenue goes. So in terms of unemployment is actually increasing the number of unemployment, increasing the rate of the unemployment, and that will not only affect Iraq. On the other hand, it's gonna actually on the other end is gonna affect the United States labor or workers here, because in Iraq, as I mentioned, $45 per month per person per worker, that is is a very good cheap labor market, and many corporate, many industries here will shut down and move down to Iraq, and will reestablish even the if they needed to raise the wages, they will raise it up to maybe $500 per month. Mm-hmm. This is the maximum they could do. But here, the people we have here, the workers here in the United States, they will lose their job. They will lose many of their rights, and they cannot, and the collective bargaining, they cannot get whatever they want. So the effect is going to be mutual effects, and in a negative way, not in a positive way. But only the corporates will benefit from that privatization.
But they may not benefit right away because things are so chaotic and dangerous. And I'm wondering what your view is of the occupation. Should the United States leave right away in the next 6 months? And what would the consequences of that be? Wouldn't that make it worse? How do you respond to that?
Well, actually, regarding the occupation, we view that the occupation, it is destroying the country. It brings nothing but chaos. Since day one of the occupation till this moment that I'm sitting here before you, that we have never seen a one single moment of peace. We've been promised a lot of peace, but we didn't see any of them, and I don't think we're gonna see any of that. Foreign fighters increased and began to reorganize themselves. They are heavily funded. Ba'ath remnants began to reorganize themselves around these people. Beside the way that the occupation forces are acting towards the people, the innocent civilian people, is in a very vicious way. Made the people to be sympathetic with the so-called insurgency, or they call themselves Mujahideen or whatever, just because of the way they acting towards the people. We believe the immediate withdrawal of the U.S. troops from Iraq will at least will pull the ground out of these people, or who call themselves insurgency. They will not have a chance to bomb, because they are, what they do is whatever they do, they say we are against the occupation and we need the occupation out. And people around the many people around the world think this is legitimate. They could resist, but the reality is the people just want to get rid of the occupation in order to get rid of the chaos that made by the insurgency or by the what is so called Mujahideen or whatever. We believe in the immediate withdrawal of the occupation will resolve this problem, and the question after the occupation will be who's going to take over the power, and it's going to be depending on the balance of power, rather than having people killing each other in the street and bombing each other in the street. Because today the Mujahideen or who call themselves Mujahideen or call themselves insurgency, and they even spread rumors telling the people that the Shiite group or the Shiite majority are with the occupation and the Sunnis are not with the occupation, and this creates a tension, ethnic or religious tension among these people.
Well, that's unfortunately going to have to be the last word. Amjad al-Jahari, thanks for being my guest. I want to give two websites for people who are interested in his work. There is the Unemployed Union website, uuiraq.org, and also uslaboragainstwar.org. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.